content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Essence Magazine, the December and January edition. On the cover of this edition, we have former First Lady Michelle Obama. I'm hoping that we can get to her story today, but there's quite, there's really good articles in this edition. And we're just going to go ahead and continue on with from last week. Looks like that we stopped at the money issue or the money section, I should say. So we're going to continue on with money and power, the cryptocurrency craze. Fear not. There's still plenty of time to invest in a new digital currency. But first, here's everything you need to know. Don't get it twisted, ladies. Cryptocurrency is complicated. Learning about this digital currency can seem daunting at first. But don't be intimidated if you talk to enough crypto-minded folks. From mega investors to savvy coaches to financial pros, watch some videos from Cointelegraph and Cryptocurrency Facts, or check out one of the many crypto meetups near you. You'll discover that the fundamental concepts are very straightforward. Here's our user-friendly guide. What is cryptocurrency? It's a digital or virtual form of currency that can be bought, sold, or transferred between parties over the internet. It's used to store value, much like gold, silver, and other types of traditional currencies, says Mark Grabowski. He is an associate professor at Adelphi University in Long Island, New York. He teaches a course in Bitcoin and the blockchain. But unlike traditional currency, it's not backed by physical coins or paper bills and isn't controlled by banks or the government. The groundbreaking technology is managed by computers through a predetermined process of minting or mining, a fancy way of describing how cryptocurrency transactions are verified. Anything can operate as a currency as long as it has a value from one person to the next, says Jamar James, a blockchain consultant and cryptocurrency expert in Costa Mesa, California, who teaches traders how to generate wealth through cryptocurrency. It's the first currency of its kind in that people determining its value. How does it work? Most cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum are powered by the blockchain. A blockchain is a tamper-proof shared ledger, like the ledger an accountant uses, or a database that anyone in the world can see in real time, says Jamar Johnson, a crypto executive who recently relocated to San Juan, Puerto Rico from Chicago. Cryptocurrency is based purely on math, and the data is open source, meaning everyone can see the transactions. However, your money is stored in a digital wallet and encrypted to keep hackers out. When you send cryptocurrency to someone or use it to make a purchase, about 5,000 places, including Microsoft, Dish Network, and Overstock.com, accepted it. You don't need a bank, a credit card company, or a third-party app like Venmo. Most transactions go directly from you to the other person and arrive almost instantly. That's why cryptocurrencies are referred to as decentralized, says Grabowski. There's no bank or government that coordinates the transactions, and that's the beauty of it. It allows individuals to protect themselves from hyperinflationary currencies in chaos field places around the globe, and gives unbanked populations access to the world economy, says Johnson. But can you trust it? Early adopters say yes, because the technology uses cryptography to secure and verify transactions. When did it begin? So cryptography, the art and science of writing in secret code, was famously used by the Germans during World War II to hide communication from Allied forces. During the early 90s, a group called the Cypherpunks, now considered legendary by hackers and cryptographers, proposed creating a digital currency based on cryptographic technology, which resulted in several unsuccessful attempts to develop virtual money. In 2009, Satoshi Nakamoto launched Bitcoin, the first decentralized crypto coin, in response to the 2008 financial crisis and the fall of Lehman Brothers, as trust in our financial institutions hit record lows. Peer-to-peer money stepped up as an alternative. Since then, some forms of cryptocurrency like Bitcoin have soared, with one Bitcoin trading as high as $19,000 last year. No wonder Bitcoin has been dubbed the new gold, with all other cryptocurrencies referred to as alternative coins or altcoins. So what are the different types of cryptocurrencies? There are more than 2,000 in circulation today, amounting to more than $200 billion, according to CoinMarketCap, a site that tracks the volume of various cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin and Ethereum dominate the headlines, but Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, Stellar, and EOS are gaining in popularity. There are many cryptocurrencies, but many of them are not widely used, says James. The more a currency is used, the higher the volume, which increases the value of the coins. It's all about supply and demand. How do you make money? On a Zoom conference call about crowdfunding last year, real estate investor Rishana Bennett of New York City got the tea on how to invest in Bitcoin to create another income stream. At first, it sounded like a bunch of jargon, but she quickly decoded the lingo. It's like investing in the stock market, except you are investing in digital assets that are backed by a business idea, says Bennett, who was determined not to miss out on the next Facebook. She invested in ICOs, and it's also referred to as initial coin offerings, through which cryptocurrency startups seek investors to launch new altcoins. I initially invested a $150 per startup, spending about $1,350, says Bennett. Investors like Bennett wager that as more people buy in, the value of the altcoin rises, similar to how the stock market works. For example, if you buy 10,000 coins at 50 cents per coin and the value of each coin grows to $1, you would make a $5,000 in profit. Bennett advises opening a trading or exchange account such as Coinbase, Gemini, or Binance. Simply connect your banking information to the site and purchase the desired amount of coins. Once you invest, decide if you want to hold for the short term or long term, says Bennett. Always give yourself a budget and only invest what you are willing to lose. What are the benefits? Just as Napster revolutionized the music industry, cryptocurrency is transforming the financial industry. That's because the benefits of cryptocurrency go beyond investment profits. Money is easily remitted across borders, and because the system is decentralized, the consumer is in control. Bypassing banks and governments with data encryption, limiting the potential for fraud. The financial market has been rigged for far too long, says Altif Brown, which is he's the co-founder and chief community officer of Constellation Labs in San Francisco. Cryptocurrency is a way to perform transactions any way you like with unfettered freedom. It may not directly benefit any one person as much as it does the larger ecosystem of decentralization. What are the risks? Crypto coins are new and unproven. Will they catch on like the U.S. dollar, the euro, the British pound, and the Japanese yen? That remains to be seen. If consumers, banks, and governments don't mass adopt cryptocurrency as a form of money, the coins could very well be rendered worthless. Also, as Ahmed Malakhan, author of The Story of the Blockchain, A Beginner's Guide to the Technology No One Understands, points out, you are responsible for your own coins. So if a thief or hacker somehow steals your digital wallet, there is no way to get them back and no one to call for a refund. Market volatility is another point to keep in mind, as some traders have seen declines of up to 94%. Johnson advises newbies to exercise caution when exploring the blockchain world for the first time. It's crucial to do your own due diligence and not take anything at face value, he says. Is it too late to jump on the bandwagon? Absolutely not. Cryptocurrency is still in its infancy, so your timing is perfect. Cryptocurrency advisor James likes this revolution to the early days of the World Wide Web. The same way the internet changed the world, the blockchain will impact the way that data is stored, he says. That's what happens with mass adoption, adds Bennett. In our community, consumers spend more than $1 trillion a year. We have to teach each other that we can use these other means of investment to change our lives. So that was some good information on cryptocurrency, because I didn't know much about it myself. So I just learned some things on it. Continuing on with money and power, E-Suite rising through the ranks. For nearly two decades, Walmart Senior VP Latrice Watkins has played a pivotal role in the retail giant's global dominance. Hear her recipe for leadership. Growing up in McGehee, Arkansas, Latrice Watkins was never one to settle in what was given. She now serves as Senior Vice President and General Merchandising Manager of Consumables at Walmart, the biggest retailer in the world. Always a go-getter, Watkins didn't break stride even when she welcomed her first child while in law school. Below, she retraces her steps to success. Lean into your family legacy. My grandmother, Ruby, worked at a truck stop as a cook, and that's where I got my first job. For 2 weeks, I did dishes, then I campaigned and got promoted to waitress. I've always been inspired by the women in my family, including my great-great-grandmother, my grandmothers, my stepdad's mom, and my mother-in-law. There is a strength in that struggle and in our success. I now share that with my 9-year-old daughter, London. Believe in yourself. My son Alex is 20 and is a student at Morehouse College. He was born 2 weeks before my third year of law school. I missed the first week of class. Then I went back. I was determined. When your mind is strong, or your mindset is strong, you can do anything. Sometimes when you get older, doubt can creep in. If it does, just think back to your younger self when you were more courageous and believed in yourself. You also need good girlfriends who will remind you of who you are. Say yes to opportunity. In high school, I was cheerleading captain and president of the student council. After attending Spelman, I headed straight to law school. I came to Walmart in my second year. I had applied for two part-time jobs, one at Walmart and the other at a firm in Fayetteville, Arkansas, where my law school was. I interviewed for both. The next morning, I got a call from the law school saying, "You got the job." And in the afternoon, I got a call from Walmart saying, "You got the job." So I took both jobs. I worked at them for about 6 months, but chose to stay at Walmart. I started in the real estate department learning about property rights. Walmart is the largest holder of real estate in the U.S. The day after the bar exam, my hiring manager called to invite me back for a full-time position. I drove my U-Haul from Atlanta to Bentonville, Arkansas. I was really brave in those days. You're in the middle of nowhere in a U-Haul, and you're like, okay, I'm doing this. Lead with respect. A couple of years in, I was managing colleagues I had interned for. It didn't matter because I was never going to be like, now I'm the boss. Things come full circle, and it's important to treat everyone with respect. Always treat people in a way that allows you to go back to them if you need help. You have to navigate relationships. Seek support and feedback. I stayed in real estate for 10 years, becoming a senior director. During that time, I held a leadership position at the African American Associate Resource Group for employees and met a lot of people in the company, including a mentor. I found out about a job in sustainability and met with my mentor to discuss it. He said, well, you could do that, but I think it'll take you longer to get where you can go. This is a retail company, so you might want to think about merchandising. Everybody else had said, yes, I think you'd be great at that. His point was, do something that's going to challenge you and help you learn things that you aren't already good at. So I took merchandising role at Sam's Club, an affiliate of Walmart. The people in merchandising buy products for stores and clubs and negotiate everything. Play full out. 2 years into my role at Sam's Club, my manager called to say that Walmart wanted me for a job. She gave me the best advice that I've ever been given and that I try to share often. She said, go and talk to them like you want the job. Get the offer because you are interested enough and because you convinced them that you were the person for the job. Then you don't want it. Don't take it. But don't not get offered the job. I followed her advice and got the job, which was running the company's alcohol division for the U.S. I was still senior director. I didn't move levels immediately, but I got more opportunity, and it ultimately paid off. Most of us don't get promoted as fast as we think we should, but there can be a ton of value in moving across departments. I was able to accelerate a little bit faster because of my varied experiences. Within 2 years, I was promoted to senior vice president. Stay open to change. Other than being a daughter, a mother, and a friend, I found that working with Walmart is the longest relationship I've had in my life. I've learned to understand and operate within this culture. When Doug McMillian became CEO, he created 8 work streams that each had a lead. I thought I would never want to do that lead job, but then I got offered the position. I remember Doug saying, you can always go back to merchandising, so you won't lose anything. You'll just get more new experience. I decided to go for it and found that it gave me an opportunity to be exposed to a different level of leadership and interaction with the C-suite. This gave me critical visibility in that part of the organization. Always look ahead. I don't ever rest on what I've already done. I constantly challenge myself. For me, the year ends January 31st. So on that day, I take a sheet of paper and write the lessons learned that year. This habit will push you into the next 12 months. I focus on how I will develop, help other people, and continue to grow. Lift as you climb. Most of my days are jam-packed, but every month I set aside time just for mentoring. I get to talk to people and help guide them. In the process of doing that, I discover so much and get joy out of people's experiences. I try to be really honest. I talked to a guy last night who just got promoted. He said, I told my wife, you'll probably never see me. I said, well, call her back and tell her that you were just kidding because that's not okay. Jobs don't love you back. People do. And the more we keep that in mind, the better everyone will be. So let's move on to the lady of the hour, Michelle Obama, and it looks like that her section is quite lengthy, so I'm going to try my best to read it during this time. But if, of course, if I don't finish, then we'll start back up next week with continuing on with her story. Having her say, so forever First Lady Michelle Obama opens up to Essence about the factors that shaped her, the art of balancing career, marriage, and motherhood, and what to keep top of mind when it comes to finding your Barack. Oh, yeah, she went there. Since leaving the White House 23 months ago, Michelle Obama had been keeping a well-earned and relatively low profile, spending time at home in D.C. with the family, vacationing with friends, catching up on novels, and writing the story of her life. Little black girl from the south side of Chicago grows up and becomes the first African-American First Lady of the United States. But now, things are about to change big time with the November release of her much-anticipated memoir, Becoming Mrs. Obama 54, is stepping back into the spotlight to share her truth. Has her journey been extraordinary? Most definitely. But life ain't been no crystal stair. Her father suffered from multiple sclerosis. Teachers weren't always on her side. Campus life at Princeton University wasn't always welcoming, and plenty of the president's detractors were mean and racist. I've spent the last year and a half reflecting on my story as deeply and honest as I could, she said. I want to inspire others to reflect upon and share their own stories. All the joys and sorrows, all the scars and renewals. Essence recently caught up with Mrs. Obama and posed a wide range of questions, including what's next for her. And she answered. So prepare to be surprised, enlightened, and inspired. What was one aspect of your life as a young adult that helped shape the woman you became? Her response is, at birth, we're all surrounded by forces that we have no control over. And in Becoming, I write about some of the factors that influenced me from an early age. Watching my neighborhood shift as white flight took effect. My parents' ability to foster confidence and independent thinking. The Sunday dinners I spent with a grandfather who moved north during the Great Migration, only to see his prospects stunned because of the color of his skin. That was the context I was dropped into as a little girl. One of the bigger factors I realized now was growing up with a father who had multiple sclerosis, a neurological disease that affected his ability to move and accomplish daily tasks. My dad was diagnosed with MS as a young man, and while it never seemed to dampen his spirit, it did affect the way my family lived. The Robinsons were planners by necessity, climbing an extra flight of stairs, walking a quarter mile from a fairway parking spot. We couldn't just take those kinds of things for granted. We had to have a plan. If we were going to one of my brother's basketball games, for instance, we'd leave the house long before game time so my dad could find a seat in the bottom few rows of stands, something he could reach with his crutches or later his wheelchair. This was before the Americans with Disabilities Act came into effect, with an accessible seat was often hard to find, if one existed at all. So that extra hour of preparation was the only way my dad could be certain he could watch his son's game with any degree of comfort. That level of planning filtered into my personality, too. In college, my friends teased me because I created a detailed year-long strategy to complete my thesis on time, and I actually stuck to it. The truth is, I'm still that kind of person. I practice every speech I give. I make a lot of long-term plans, and in all my years in the White House, when our world could get flipped upside down by a news story or a hurricane crashing ashore, one of the things that gave me peace in mind was having a concrete plan in place for our family. Not just for tomorrow, But for the next week and the next few months, of course, I'd often have to switch gears and be flexible. But I wanted to be as sure as I could that the demands of the presidency didn't constantly pull me away from Malia's tennis matches or Sasha's dance performances. Even now, that same type of careful preparation is a big part of who I am. Before becoming our first lady, you managed a busy career while building your marriage and having children. You were sometimes the higher earner in your family and traded in your professional career to serve our country. What advice would you give other women on navigating the intersections of love, life, career, and family while still trying to find our identities outside of what we do? This is a riddle that most families struggle to solve. And as we all know, the burden of figuring it out usually falls on women. Back before anyone in Tennessee or Montana knew who Barack Obama was, I was a vice president at a major hospital, juggling two little girls and a state legislator husband who was away from the home for large parts of many weeks. I'm not going to lie. It wasn't easy for me, but what I learned is that all the frustrations, all the trials and errors, all that is necessary work. The only way to find some balance is to live through a lot of imbalance. I'll share two pieces of advice. The first is that you've got to ask for help. I've learned that lesson many, many times, often the hard way. I think as women, we've internalized the idea that a modern professional woman should be able to do everything, to move mountains at work, to pack lunches for our kids every morning, and tuck them in every night to patch up torn jeans and decorate our homes perfectly and attend every PTA meeting. All while the fire of a marriage that belongs on the pages of a romance novel. It sounds so silly to say it all out loud, doesn't it? But in our own minds, those expectations, even if we readily accept that they're unrealistic, can still feel like real pressure. They weigh on us down and stress us out. They make us feel like we're failing. They're a straight line to self-defeat. And actually, I'm going to stop right there, but we will definitely get back to this story next week because we've run out of time with today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, www.triangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.